We're talking with Gene Cernan, who's commander of Apollo 17. Gene, tell us a little about yourself. You were born in Chicago, weren't you?
Well, I was born in Chicago, I guess about 38 years ago, which seems like a long time. I grew up in the western suburbs, about 18 to 20 miles west of Chicago, and went to high school there, and then went from there to Purdue University, where I earned a bachelor's degree in engineering and was also in NROTC, was commissioned in the Navy, and went from there to Navy flight training. So from that point on, I really didn't spend much time at home, although my mother still lives in the western suburbs of Chicago, where I grew up, as a matter of fact, in the same house. My sister, however, who also grew up, spent most of her time back there, has since moved to Seattle. I spent several years in the, well, I'm still in the Navy, obviously, but going through flight training, and spent a great deal of time in Florida, in California, and spent an awful lot of time flying off of aircraft carriers in the western Pacific, and had an opportunity to go back to school, to the Naval Postgraduate School, to get an additional education in engineering, and I did. And fortunate for me at that time is when the National Aeronautics and Space Administration was looking for new astronauts. However, at that time, I really didn't apply for the program because, oddly enough, I thought, from a standpoint of experience, that I didn't have enough in terms of test pilot experience, in terms of total number of flight hours. But it was at that point that NASA actually reduced the requirements, and it allowed a few fellows like myself to be given a chance. And so here I am.
Now you have your own family that will be following the whole flight of Apollo 17, right?
Right. I have a little girl, 9-year-old little girl.
You're not a stranger to space, or for that matter, the area of the moon, at least.
No, I flew on Gemini 9, and that was an Earth orbital mission, as you might recall, for 3 days.
That's back in '66.
'66, right? And Tom Stafford and I really sort of it was a rendezvous research mission. It also was a spacewalk mission, so an opportunity, a pretty exciting one, as a matter of fact, to walk around the world a couple times, which is sort of a unique comment, I guess. Following that, in 1969, I flew again with Tom Stafford and John Young, and we flew on Apollo 10, and we did go to the moon, and we did take our lunar module with us and separate, and at that point in time, it was the closest that any man had been to the surface of the moon, and that was quite an experience also. Not just the experience of coming close to the moon, but having the experience of being able to be a quarter million miles away from this Earth and look back and look at our Earth. That, to me, is probably one of the most emotional and beautiful views I've ever seen in my life.
And now with Apollo 17, you'll have your chance for the surface of the moon.
There's a gap of 50,000 feet I'd like to cover. And you know, with a little help, and we've got a lot of it from a lot of good people, and God willing, we'll cover that last 50,000 feet.
Well, the very best. I'm sure you'll enjoy being on the moon.
Well, I'm looking forward to it very much.
Commander of Apollo 17, Gene Cernan. This is Jim Parisi from the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston, Texas. Talking with the commander of Apollo 17, Gene Cernan. Gene, give us an idea of the overall purpose of the Apollo 17 mission.
Well, Apollo 17 being the last lunar landing in the Apollo series, it's really got the responsibility of trying to wrap up as much of the information and put together as much of the information, write the last chapter in a book, if you will, the summary of what we've learned from the entire Apollo program. The landing site was picked for several reasons, but one of which was for just the reason I mentioned, a landing site, an area where we could probably tie together as much of the evolution of the moon, as much as we've learned up until this time, tie all that together and come out with some logical conclusions as to the history and the evolution of the moon itself. So we have, as a result, several different and new experiments in our scientific package. We're going to stay just a little bit longer. The landing site is a place that we probably would not have gone to previously because of our experience. We've gained a great deal of confidence in our ability to go to places that are a little bit more difficult to get into, places that are a little bit more difficult to explore once you get on the surface. The whole evolution of Apollo 17 is sort of built around getting as much information as you possibly can from this last mission and tying it in to all the information that we've learned prior to this.
Are the mechanics very much different from the previous missions?
No.
The mechanics of getting there?
No, not really. As a matter of fact, you know, once you develop a capability in a system such as Apollo to go to the moon, and certainly just as important to us, and I'm sure everybody, a system that'll get you home, you build on that system. You try and profit from your mistakes. You try and profit from the experience. You try and make sure that any of the problems you've had in the past will not happen again. You try and make that system, those spacecraft, better than they were the last time they went. And this is what we've done each time. We've built traditionally on those spacecraft, haven't changed them really, and haven't changed our techniques, just tried to make sure that we will not run into any problems that we've run into before, utilizing the experience we've had, try and predict any problems and prevent them from happening on this mission. Of course, you never know what's going to happen, and no one is ever really entirely smart enough to know what that next little problem is going to be to fix it ahead of time. We've tried to do that, and as a result, the mechanics of the entire going and coming and landing once we get there are pretty much similar, but a little bit more sophisticated than the past.
Would you give us a capsulized rundown of the mission? Now, one big difference in this one is that it starts at night.
Well, we're going to have a night launch, which in itself ought to be spectacular. I understand if it's a clear night, people in the United States will be able to see this liftoff from somewhere about 500 miles from somewhere in North Carolina through Alabama and down into Cuba, as a matter of fact. The night launch is a requirement. It didn't evolve by accident, but it's a requirement in order to get to our landing site in December. It's the only way we can get there. It's the only time of day we can get to where we want to go. But in itself, certainly is a unique part of the flight, and I'm looking forward to that very much. There's only one other place I'd rather be than in the cockpit, and that's to be out watching it, because it ought to be spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll spend our 3 days getting to the moon. We'll be in lunar orbit for several hours once we get there, doing an awful lot of photographic tasks and experiments within a command and service module itself. And the next day when we get up, we will prepare the LEM for its descent. The landing, hopefully, I'd like to say, will be a very uneventful and very nominal happening, although, you know, for someone who's never landed on the surface of the moon, you can never say that things are going to be uneventful in a situation like that. Even if that was a velvet carpet we were landing on rather than a fairly rough terrain, I'm sure it really would be just as interesting, just as exciting, and certainly just as challenging. We're going to spend just a little over 3 days, which is longer than any other mission has spent on the surface of the moon. We're going to go out of the spacecraft three times with our lunar rover for periods up to 7 hours each. And if we get 7 hours each on each of those EVAs, it will be the longest time man has stayed outside the spacecraft. And again, because of confidence we've built up by Apollo 15's and 16's operations with the lunar rover, we're going to go further than any other mission has gone because of the geologic interest in the area. We will be going over 7 kilometers away from the lunar module with our rover, and that's a long way. And if those people who are familiar with the terrain, it's very mountainous. We have an earthquake-like cliff structure, scarp, as the geologists call it, that we will climb over with the rover. So the challenge for the rover itself to perform is quite significant. We'll return to the at the end of those 3 days, return to the command and service module, by the way, one which we've called America, and I think very appropriately so. Spend another day and a half in lunar orbit and then return, and it'll be about a 3-day trip coming home.
Total number of days?
Total number of days is 13.
The very best.
Thank you very much.
Commander of Apollo 17, Gene Cernan. This is Jim Parisi at the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston, Texas. Gene, the Taurus Littrow site that you're heading for on Apollo 17 gives you some special landing problems that have never been faced before, doesn't it?
Well, it does, particularly in the targeting that the ground has to do to get us into this area. It's sort of a box canyon. We have a very mountainous area. We have mountains both to the north and the south of our landing site that go up to 7,000 feet, and there's only an area of about 5 kilometers between these mountains that are accessible to land in. We also land over mountains that are upwards of 6,000 feet. We have in front of us a cliff-like structure, a scarp that is 80 to 100 meters high, which is going to look bigger and bigger the closer we get to the surface. So the big picture of the landing site, as far as the difficulty of getting into, is really quite different than what we've ever done in the past. We don't have the room for error in terms of targeting our vehicle into this area. However, when we actually get down to the last few hundred feet or last few hundred meters just prior to landing, the site, although it's quite rough and it's quite crater-filled, really should not be that much different than Apollo 16's landing site. So when you get down to that point, you have to, there's no one else who can help you but yourself. You've got to look out that window. You've got to find an area that is free of boulders, an area that's free of craters, maneuver the spacecraft over, and land it. And you have to do all that in a hurry because we don't have the privilege of carrying a great deal of extra fuel with us.
Well, you've seen the site, and as a matter of fact, you've tried to land on it many, many times in simulation here on Earth, and you'll have many chances to see it before you actually land in the lunar environment, too, won't you?
Well, we'll pass over the site several times prior to landing, but we'll be at an altitude the first two times around in 150 to 170 miles, where you can't, the resolution of what you can see is not what you'd like to see. I'd like to see those little holes that are 2 and 3 meters across, because those are the ones that eventually we're going to have to avoid when it comes down to the final landing.
Well, in the final landing, as you come toward or into the landing site, are you going to be able to see it a good distance before you actually get to it?
Yes, we actually have a view of the landing site when we're 7,000 feet in the air, and this is all probably 2 or 3 minutes of flying time prior to the actual touchdown point. And it sounds like a lot of time, and it sounds like a great distance at which to view the landing site, but believe me, that time period progresses very rapidly, and the decisions that have to be made at that point in time have to be made on a basis of instinct and a basis of training and a basis of best judgment at that point in time.
Incidentally, it's called Taurus Littrow, the landing area. Tell us why.
Well, the landing area itself is on the southeastern side of the Great Basin of Serenitatis, which is a very large desert-like basin on the moon, and it's bordered by the Taurus Mountains, and then there's another crater, a smaller crater, by small, it's still several kilometers across, called Littrow. And there was really no designation for this area when it was picked as a landing site, so the combination of the Taurus Mountains and a crater Littrow, it was named Taurus Littrow.
And the names come from where?
Well, the names come from the history of visual exploration of the moon that goes back far beyond Apollo. Names that were given by astronomers and explorers and people who looked at the moon many, many years before I even got interested in it, I guess.
But there's a mountain range here on Earth called Taurus, isn't there?
You know, I'm not aware of that. I'm glad you told me. Where is it?
In Turkey.
Is that right?
As a matter of fact, yes. And then Littrow was the Austrian astronomer. Well, you will soon be seeing the site right there, and I wish you the best for that. Talking with Gene Cernan, commander of Apollo 17. This is Jim Parisi from the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston, Texas. Gene, not long after the arrival on the surface of the moon of the lunar module with you and Jack Schmidt in it, you'll take your first EVA, extra vehicular activity. Tell us about that. How will that go?
Well, I hope it goes well. We're planning a 7-hour exploration of the surface at that point in time. However, at least the first half of that, we're going to have to effectively set up all our equipment. We're going to spend all that time in what we call overhead, getting the lunar rover unpacked, because the lunar rover is realistic as it looks, with all its wheels unfolded and all its gear on board when it's driving across the surface, is really nothing but a little bundle of packed up wheels and what have you, that is effectively just strapped to the side of the lunar module. We have to unload this rover. We have to really sort of build ourselves a transportation system on a lunar surface. And until we do that, we can't really set out for the task at hand. We'll do that. We will unload a great deal of our lunar geology tools, a great deal of the experiments, a great many of the experiments that are actually packed in other places within the exterior of the spacecraft, and then set out to deploy or set up the scientific package, the ALSEP package itself. And once we do this, once we get this done, and I expect that'll take upwards to 4 hours, 4 to 5 hours, we can then set out on a geology exploration during that first EVA. The next two EVAs, however, are devoted, are each 7 hours long, and they're devoted almost entirely and explicitly to the geologic investigation of the lunar surface.
And not long after you've come out of the lunar module, the lunar lander, we'll be able to see you on television.
Well, it won't be quite as early as you have in the past, because until we get the lunar rover set up, and yet its communication set up, there will be no television as there has in the past. Normally, you could see that first man walk down the ladder on the lunar surface. But in order to save weight, we took off some extra antennas, we took off some extra brackets, and some extra cabling at the cost of not having television for possibly the first 30 minutes of our lunar surface activity.
Then we'll be able to see all of the surface activity by that same camera, won't we?
Hopefully that camera will perform like it has in the past, and through the eyes of that camera, hopefully we can share not just those activities, but the excitement of what we see and the excitement of what we're doing while we're there. And I really believe that once that camera looks around and looks up at all those mountains, it's going to be one of the most magnificent sights that anyone's ever seen, considering especially that it's coming from 250,000 miles away.
Well, you look forward to it, and I'm sure we do, too. Thank you very much. Commander of Apollo 17, Gene Cernan. This is Jim Parisi, VOA, Manned Spacecraft Center, Houston, Texas. Gene, one of the experiments you'll be working with on the surface of the moon is the heat flow experiment. Would you tell us about that, please?
Well, the heat flow experiment is itself part of our ALSEP, our large scientific package we're taking to the moon, package powered, by the way, by a nuclear generator, which is quite significant, I think, as far as its applications here on Earth.
ALSEP, by the way, standing for Apollo Lunar Scientific Experiment Package.
Right.
Okay.
The heat flow is a experiment we have flown twice before, but not totally successfully. It was flown on Apollo 15 and Apollo 16, and it is the experiment which requires us to bore a hole several meters into the surface of the moon in order to put a heat probe, a heat sensor, if you will, probe down into the moon, so that we can get temperature changes. Now, this is a very important experiment to the scientific community of the world, because it gives us a feel for temperature changes as they may occur within a crust of the moon's surface, and to some degree allows us to find out how these temperatures vary with lunar daytime and lunar nighttime. Could very possibly give us an opportunity to extrapolate or project some of this data towards the center of the moon to determine if it did or when it did, or if it does have a hot core or a molten core. Most people at this point in time think it does not. But it's a unique experiment because it's one that takes a great deal of extra effort to bore those holes. We have a special drill. Dave Scott and John and Charlie Duke, rather, on Apollo 16, both worked very hard. We found out that their heart rates and their work output was quite high. As a matter of fact, the time consumed for me to do this drill work equals the time that it takes Jack Schmidt, to deploy the balance of the entire lunar LSEP. So you can see that the majority of my time is going to be as a lunar surface driller during that first hour or so of our EVA activity.
Talking with Gene Cernan, commander of Apollo 17. From Houston, Texas, and the Manned Spacecraft Center, this is Jim Parisi. Gene, you and the crew have named the command module of Apollo 17 America and the lunar module, the lunar lander, Challenger. Why?
Well, we feel very strong about the symbolism of our patch, and if I can start out by just referring you to the fact that we feel that the Apollo program is a program that truly has been given and belongs to all the world. The accomplishments of the Apollo program are accomplishments, and returns from the Apollo program are returns that will go in not just to our country, but to all the world. You know, when Neil Armstrong said, for the benefit of all mankind, that's truly what he meant, and I think that's truly the way this entire program has developed. However, I think people throughout the world will allow me to be a little bit parochial, to just say it was America, it was the United States, it is the United States that has given this exploration of outer space to the world. And as a result, we feel very strong about paying tribute to the people in this country who have dedicated their lives and who have given their time to making Apollo possible. And we felt that there could be no better tribute paid to these people than to name our command module, and fittingly enough, the last command module that will fly to the moon, America. Challenger comes from the fact that that's what this program is. It's a challenge. This country of ours, America, has been built upon people accepting challenges. It has been built upon courage and sacrifice. It has been built upon people not turning their back upon that which was difficult. As a result, we decided, thought a long time about it, as a matter of fact, but decided that Challenger might symbolically be significant to that effort that people of this country have put forth for 200 years. But it also, I feel, gives all of mankind a feeling that Apollo is really just the beginning of the challenge that we have, that all the peoples of the earth have in the future.
Finally, would you very briefly sum up for us what this means, what Apollo 17 means to you personally?
Well, of course, Apollo 17 personally is a very individual challenge. It's a tremendous responsibility from the standpoint of being commander of this flight, from the standpoint of returning some of the confidence that people have had in me with a successful mission. Apollo 17 means that this country, the world, all of mankind has taken that first major step. We have started out, we have set out to land on another planet. We have successfully explored that planet. We have come back, and we are now going to regroup, not just as a country, but as a world, and look at new horizons. And I fully believe that as a world, that as a world of nations, that we will step out into that infinity of time and infinity of space and go to Mars and go to those other places, because the human intellect, the human being as God has created us, is not satisfied to stay quiescent.
The commander of Apollo 17, Gene Cernan. From the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston, Texas, this is Jim Parisi for the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Gene Cernan, commander of Apollo 17. Ron, Jack, and I would just like to thank you for listening to this live program covering of our flight to the moon. Hello, I'm Gene Cernan, commander of Apollo 17, and I just want to say good morning and welcome to this Apollo program.